Thanks, Bob. Good evening, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Craig. Honored and privileged to be here, as I am every week. We mentioned we're looking at eight today. We're probably going to touch on eight and nine because I won't be here on the 29th. And that'll leave us some time to still get into that really deep, hopefully passionate Q&A/sharing session we have towards the end. To cover everything. I also heard, Brooke, is there some questions already? Can we start with questions? Are you okay with that? Or you got to get them all?
It's on its way. I don't know how I do know how. I deleted it. So it's on its way back over to me. I've just reached out to the person to send it. It's regarding tradition seven. So just give me a couple minutes. And as soon as I have it, I will raise my hand. And let me actually, because we had some from the week that you were here. Actually,
All right. So just let me know when you're good. No problem. Just raise your hand. So I'm going to do as we do every week. I'm going to read the short form and the long form. As you know, I will say it over and over and over again. I feel the long form is a lot more explicit, a lot more clear, a lot more conducive, to what we're trying to do by helping others in the service structure, by helping others even outside of the service structure, even outside of AA, to understand what we really mean when we share each of these traditions. So if you look at the short form of eight, it says very simply, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. For those that are fairly well-versed in the traditions, those that have served in the home group level and outside the home group level, that's pretty clear, right? Like we don't professionalize a 12-step, and we do employ people at our special service centers. Absolutely. But when we look at the long form, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or higher. This is why I enjoy the long form. It's very clear. We need clarity. It saves about 3 hours and 45 minutes outside by the dumpster after the meeting, because then we could just be on the same page. But we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed, but our usual A 12-step work is never to be paid for. That is crystal, crystal clear. And again, I really enjoy the long form. Like a lot of people have been in Alcoholics Anonymous for years and years and years, and they're not sure what makes an AA group or what makes an AA member. The long form of Tradition 3 tells you very clearly what makes an AA group and what makes an AA member. And here we are in the long form of Tradition 8, which kind of defines professionalism as we understand it as an organization. Until we decide otherwise, this is, you know, the grounds in which we're going to communicate. I'm going to reference Comes of Age here and go through some of those pages, but I just want to throw some things out there really quick. First of all, another piece of literature that I think is very helpful, especially in 2024, is the A guidelines on A members employed in the alcoholism field. It talks to you very clearly about the difference between someone that's working at a center and not. We have a lot of our members, some of them really good members, to be quite honest. I mean, I guess you could debate that, but in my opinion, good people care about others and stuff of that sort. But they're wearing two hats. They're trying to sponsor people that they're treating inside the treatment center, and then they're trying to be a professional to those that they sponsor. They're handing out cards. Again, this is my opinion. This is left for your interpretation as far as this particular statement. But if I'm a professional with respect to counseling alcoholics, even though I have a business card, even though I've probably spent $50 on 400 of them, I'm not handing them out at the AA meeting because it's confusing to someone new. I'm handing you a card that says addiction services or something like that. I repeat, that's my opinion. You can interpret that as you'd like. But the point I'm trying to get at is we need to be very, very clear. We love shouting from the rooftops that we love the big book because it's clear and concise. It's clear and concise. Well, we need to be clear and concise with respect to traditions, which allows us, of course, to have unity. The AA guidelines on AA members employed in the professional field talks about having one hat at the public level, talks about keeping things separate between being a counselor and being a sponsor or even being an AA member for that matter. What's very interesting about this is we don't hear a lot of success stories because those that are doing it right are not talking about it. So I enjoy opportunities to have discussions about those that are employed in the field. What are, like, I know members that are employed in the field and they go out of their way because they want privacy when they go to an AA group. So lots of things to consider. Don't want to get lost on just that point, but Tradition 8 talks about the 12 step not being professional. We appreciate an AA shoulder to shoulder and altruism, not this idea of like, and you can take this as far as you want. Like with respects to individual self-appointed big book studies, I don't have a problem with a big book study. I don't have a problem with reading the book together, but when we have self-appointed individuals telling you how to read it, how to interpret it, who should sponsor you, what's going on, there's sort of an element, not in the conventional sense, but there's an element of professionalizing. There's an element of hierarchy. There's an element of this is better than that versus having your own experience, which is troublesome to me. The other reason we have this in Tradition 8, even though we talked about money in the previous traditions, this really keeps money out of it. It's for free and for fun. We all know that expression, right? I remember being so brand new to the traditions. I was a traveling slam poet, so I was definitely a broke artist. But I somehow managed to sell cars on the side, and I had a very nice truck. And some people that I worked with meaning sponsees, wanted a ride to a meeting. Guess what I didn't have? Gas money. I had no gas money because I was broke as a joke. And I was very confused. Like, should I be asking them for gas money to get to a meeting? And I learned something through that process because I wasn't charging them to go through the big book. I wasn't charging them to get sober. But in order for the car to move, if I didn't have any money, we were going to have to chip in together and put some gas in the car. Very clear lines. And my message here isn't go ask your sponsees for gas money. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is there's a line between trying to charge for carrying the message and then whether we're paying our special workers, whether we're paying our own way, whether we're paying registration for a convention, or whether we're helping putting gas in a fellow AA member's car to get there, sponsor or not. Special workers are hired. When we say special workers, a lot of the time we think about the General Service Office, but those are not the only special workers. We have intergroups and central offices. And, you know, it's we're supposed to pay them well. We're supposed to take care of them. And we want to encourage their participation in the service structure. As someone who worked at the General Service Office myself and spent several years there and went to conferences and answered 1,500 emails and phone calls a week and yada, yada, a month rather, there was a lot of experience I had that was important in discussions that we would have, whether it was at General Service Board meetings or whether it was at a registrar's workshop on a virtual platform. We want to ask those special workers to talk to us. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? We don't want to give them more power than any other member, but we want to hear what's their experience. You're talking to 1,500 members a month. What are you hearing? You know, what kind of emails are coming across your desk? You know, what are people concerned with? How do people feel about the updated service piece, blah, blah, blah. Like, so we want to engage them. So see, the eighth tradition takes on something way more than just we shouldn't professionalize the 12 step, excuse me, and we employ special workers. Well, what do we do with those special workers? And why don't we want to professionalize? And that's kind of what we're talking about a little. Go ahead, Brooke.
Okay. So the question that I had left over is, it says, as far as tradition 6 and 7, I was on a website for an AA roundup conference type thing, and I noticed that they had an ad for a tire company on the website stating they were, quote unquote, sponsored by them. It was taken down not long after. This was an AA event put on by AAs. What are the guidelines as far as AA events?
Thanks for that question. And while I have plenty of experience to share, and I'm sure others in this room do too, again, another good reference, if you go to AA.org and you go to the section for members and you look at AA guidelines, there's not only guidelines on self-support, there's also guidelines on, you know, roundups, conventions, etc. So those are things you could review and look at. Just throwing that out there. Yes, we clearly, do not want, and I'd be interested in what happened there. Did somebody not know, or did the website, you know, automatically throw that up? I don't know. I have no idea, but we definitely do not take sponsorship from outside sources. We definitely do not take money from outside sources. We definitely do not use outside sources' names. We don't give our name. We don't give money outside. And as I spoke about a couple of weeks ago, if you follow the name and you follow the money, you can figure out if you're in good shape. So as long as you're using the name Alcoholics Anonymous, and long as the money is staying here, and I'm not talking about paying rent. Of course, you have to pay rent, buy coffee. But I'm saying as long as the money stays here without affiliation, we're usually in good hands. It's a good question, though, because we have to be careful before we sign up for a website, before we do something on a grander scale. And these are some of the traditions we already talked about, tradition four, consultation. If it's the first time we're putting something on a website, we should be consulting with others that have put something on a website. That's why we have these principles. Is there more, Brooke?
Yeah, so I found a few others that I had from that couple weeks ago. And I don't remember if we answered this one or not, so I'm just going to say it, and if you did, great. It says, when we have non-alcoholics suffering from another affliction coming to AA through direction from treatment and courts, but do not have the fellowship they need in our local community, what should we do to be helpful?
That's a great question. That's a phenomenal question. Because while I am a huge proponent of singleness of purpose, comma, primary purpose, I also think it's just ridiculous to tell someone you don't belong here, have a nice day. So we certainly want to try to be as helpful as we can. I always say this, no matter what level of service we're talking about, if we don't know, just be honest. Hey, I'm not sure how to help you get there. I don't know what I'm doing, but let me get your number. Let me stay connected with you. Let me find out. I will get you an answer. We will find out how you can connect. As far as the question, though, I love, even before I worked at the General Service Office and did the day of sharing with several other 12-step organizations, something I did all through my General Service career is when I would bump into people, whether it was at the International Convention or workshops or individuals that were from other organizations, as I networked and I stayed connected. And I had literature accessible. I had pamphlets accessible. I learned where their websites were just so I could be useful, not because it's required of you as a sponsor or anything of that sort. So I feel very well equipped to connect you not only with the main office number, like we have the main office for the General Service Office. I also feel like I can equip you with some virtual meetings. I feel like I can equip you with phone numbers of individuals I know. And I feel like I can send you to a website to find information. So that's what I suggest. If you don't know, say you don't know, but stay close together, close connected rather. And then in my experience, I make friends, I make networks, I build resources so that I could be most useful. Because that is still essentially carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and sticking to the singleness of purpose. Because just because they don't quote unquote belong here doesn't mean I can't offer them a place to go. It's not what AA's primary purpose is, of course, but why would we not want to be informed of that? And there are plenty of intergroups and international conventions where we let folks know where they can find those things in case they come across us, you know, on accident. But that's part of us carrying the message in the group. You know, what makes an AA group? What is our primary purpose? What don't we deal with? What do we deal with? Who are we? Who are we not? So part of explaining who we're not and what we don't do is carrying our message too. Anything else, Brooke?
Yep. Now I've got them coming in for tonight. So the first one says, is it mixing hats if, as a DCM, I have access to fellowship connection, but I am also a special worker for a central office and utilize fellowship connection in getting groups their numbers, since technically central offices don't get access to fellowship connection?
I mean, it sounds like an 11-step issue, but I will tell you, for me, I've always thought it was inappropriate for a DCM to be serving at an intergroup or central office at the same time. It's just never made sense to me. It's always seemed like a conflict of interest, not because either the general service structure of the district you serve or the intergroup one is better or worse, you're just in constant conflict, and you're also taking away from the role you're supposed to do. As far as the fellowship connection thing, I you know, you could consult your own conscience. You could look at the guidelines of, you know, who's supposed to have access to fellowship connection. So that would be up to you. But I have always felt, you know, because you're going to inevitably, if you're doing your job well, you're going to confuse the people you're serving, and you're also going to be put in a position of conflict of interest based on my experience.
Okay. And then I have one more, and it's in regards to the one you just answered. Does AA put out a GSO published fellowships other than AA list?
Wow. So like the way my personality is, everything you just said is interesting, because some of those things are not. So let me just try to sift through that and answer. So there is not a public list of other 12-step organizations in its entirety. We've had over 500 and something over the, you know, since the beginning of time. I think there's only like 200 and some active now. But there is, it's a service piece. I forget the number of it, but there is a list you can find in one of the packets, and it's slipping my mind which one, but you can find that service piece, which recommends 12 fellowships other than Alcoholics Anonymous. So yes, it does provide that, but it's not something that's, you know, posted on the website, and the group services desk is usually updating that, and you know, you can't have everything on there. So what are you getting the most inquiries about? So you keep it. I think it's the corrections workbook, actually, or the corrections material. I think that's where it's at. Any other questions? Okay. So just going through comes of age here in Tradition 8, and then we're going to scratch the surface of Tradition 9 as well. I like what it says in here on page 115, and it's talking about freely giving, freely receiving. It's talking about our purpose. Again, it's talking singleness of purpose. And what I love about 8 comes of age, as you go through the whole second legacy portion from page 79 all the way to 130 or whatever it is, you're going to see all the dots connecting. You're going to really see how we're talking a little bit about anonymity, even though we're not on Tradition 11. You're going to hear a little bit about purpose when we're on Tradition 1 and back and forth. But here's a little line with respect to Charlie Towns in the hospital. I don't know if you guys remember Bill W. was considering, you know, becoming a professional with respect to AA. And always remember this. Who were the people that put him in his place? The people that, quote unquote, didn't know much. So remember that. Early in the game, we discovered that under no conditions should an AA be paid for taking or carrying the message to someone else, person to person and face to face. That's pretty much the basis and the foundation of this principle. And I like it. And if you remember the early, through the history portion of AA Comes of Age, it talked about groups in China that were charging 100 yen to help people get sober. And that's not just a, you know, 1950 something Chinese thing. That's happening right now in the United States of America. People are charging for rides to meetings. People are trying to get your insurance information so they could be your coach. And listen, if that's the profession you want, we have no opinion on it. But we as members should not be doing that. We as groups should not be allowing that to infiltrate. I have a question that I asked my sponsees on this page. And I don't know if Nick went over it last week or not. I heard you guys were talking some questions and stuff. But do I carry our message for free and for fun? Or do I even subtly put a price tag on 12-step work? The traditions really are a truly inconvenient inventory taking process, even more inconvenient than the steps, in my opinion. They really get you to get up in there. What do I mean by this? And again, some of you that think I'm radical, some of you that think I'm fun, some of you won't even know what I'm talking about. But how do I subtly put a price tag on 12-step work? Am I expecting you to behave or do a certain thing or certain way because I'm working with you? Am I expecting you to dress a certain way? Am I expecting you to go to a certain church? Am I expecting you? Now, again, we're talking specifically in the eight tradition, professionalism and money. That's what we're talking about mostly. But I'm just throwing out there, because I'm your sponsor, do I feel I have some sort of power over what you're supposed to be doing? Do you owe me something? Because if you do, that's problematic, because I owe you something. I owe you something. I owe you something. So just things to consider, because I'm not ashamed to admit early on, because I had to learn, like everything else in my life. I knew it all first. Then I fought that I didn't know it. Then I told you I knew it better than you. Then I admitted you knew it a little bit. And then you were right, but I didn't want to tell you you were right, because I didn't have the humility to do that. And then I finally said, please help me. I have no idea what I'm doing. So after all of that, there were many moments where I sort of thought like sponsees, like when we use the phrase pigeon, I really thought they were, I told them when to get in and out of the cage. I told them when to fly away and come home. And that's like, obviously, and not to that degree, but I'm just saying that's obviously inappropriate. But this is something I can consider spiritually, which is not totally the eighth tradition, but something that comes up for me. Now remember, volunteers are different. We're talking in the eighth tradition with respect to paid employees, service workers, which is a spiritual thing, because we trust these people that we pay out of our seven tradition funds to help facilitate, help network, help make 12-step work possible. And there's lots that central offices, intergroups, and the general service office can do to help make those things possible. Whether it's create literature in countries that don't have it yet, whether it's to help bridge the gap between country-to-country sponsorship, whether it's to facilitate where the GSRs live, the database fellowship connection, whether it's to host the general service conference, regional forums, in some cases where there's a need, local forums. Like, I could go on and on and on, but this is the purpose of the special worker. And I had the privilege to sit in on a ICOAA, which is basically intergroups annual intergroups and central offices, along with AWS and A Grapevine convention. And I sat in a particular workshop, which was basically Concept 11 workshop, which basically talks about, you know, paying workers appropriate funds and this and that. I was the liaison to over 483 intergroups and central offices, if you included OIAA. And I sat in at this particular workshop. There was maybe 15 to 20 central office and intergroup office managers. And the salaries they had, I mean, you can't live on that. There was a woman who was pregnant, had no benefits. Now, this is touchy for those that are new to this topic, because there's so many variables. There's some intergroups that just don't have the money. I understand that. But then there's other places where that money is available and accessible, and we don't want to pay our paid worker a fair wage, and we don't want to give them benefits, which to me, we have to ask ourselves, is that a spiritual decision? Is that appropriate? Are you expecting your child to work those kind of hours and get that kind of money? Would you work for that kind of money? And it's an interesting discussion, right? Because everybody says the same thing before they go work for, oh my God, I'm going to work at the general service office. I'm going to work for the organization I love and this and that. Yeah, but you still have a family to support. You still have bills to pay. You still need to eat. You still need to be dressed appropriately. You still need to feel, you know, that you have value, fair to the market, if you will. And those are things that we should be on the up and up with respects to Tradition 8 and Concept 11, in my opinion. On page 116, I have it highlighted in blue because it's pretty clear. Again, we're just repeating over and over again. It talks about the story about Tom and A functioning and you know, again, I'm not going to read the whole story to you, but if you read that particular chapter section where we're talking about 12-step work for free, and I have this line highlighted, for face-to-face treatment of a drunk, no money ever. So again, we're saying the same thing over and over on each of the pages. Face-to-face treatment of a drunk, no money. Tradition 8 also touches a little bit on, in my experience, equality. If you haven't noticed, if you've been here each week with me with the traditions, I'm normally pulling things out of the hat that we're not talking about in mainstream AA with each tradition. You know, whether it's consultation in Tradition 4 or this idea of equality in Tradition 8. I mean, they're all really about equality. They're all really about unity. But I mean, I really feel the understanding of nobody being professional, which brings up this idea of hierarchies in AA and quote unquote circuit speaker and rock stardom. And we could be here all day with that discussion too. I'm not saying there aren't certain people that you really want to get up there and you want people to hear the story. I'm not saying some people don't speak better than others. But when we start making individuals an household name, tell me how that fits within the 12 traditions of alcoholics. Tell me how that's principles before personalities, you know? And I've seen with my own eyes, almost people come this close to asking for autographs, whether it's for a certain speaker or it's particular people, whether they worked at the General Service Office or they were trustees at the conference, including myself. I remember there was a span of time where I was the one always getting the microphone, always confronting people, and people just wanted to beat me outside with sticks. And the minute I got a couple of name badges, one year as a delegate, next year I worked at the office, next year I'm at the conference, all of a sudden they're like, oh, wow, Craig, you know. So it's like we, you know, those things should never determine where we fall with respect to if there's a second-class citizen in AA, because there's not. Yes, I am fully aware. And if you hear all of my talks, all of my communication, I don't want someone who's unqualified to be in a public information role. So while I'm talking about kumbaya right now and everybody's equal, I also understand some people may not have the experience to do something yet. I get that. That's not what I'm saying. But I don't like the either end where we shove people out of the way rather than help teach them. And I also don't like the idea where somebody is literally a rock star. And do me a favor, I don't think you guys would ever do this to me, but don't ever, ever put me in any category of a rock star, because you're just going to put me in a position to get drunk. That's the crazy thing, that you're actually hurting people when you do that. Because if you're alcoholic like me, you can't afford to be famous for being sober. You can't afford to have a better story than everyone else. Like, I never understood that concept. Like, there are some boring monotone people in AA. Absolutely. You know why? Because there's boring monotone people in the world. But even those boring monotone people, in my experience, when they share about how they couldn't stop drinking, they couldn't stop thinking, they couldn't stop stinking with respects to alcohol, I identified with them. And then when they started talking about getting well and getting better and getting involved, I identified with them. And here's just one side note. While I'm on the soapbox, I'll step down after this. If we want to save a few bucks, you could look locally instead of flying people in for $5,000. You could look locally for good speakers right there in your backyard. Right there in your backyard. Because they're there. Maybe not all the time, but they are. And again, please don't take me to the other extreme where I want to be punitive to those that are in those rock star roles, if you will. All I'm saying is open up an envelope or two more than you used to, turn over a rock or two more than you know, because you might find something. That's all I'm saying. Page 117, and I circle the word experience all through the book Comes of Age, because that's all we have in AA, experience. And nobody could really question your experience, and you can't really question someone else's experience. We can just connect and learn from it. Yet not a single one of them had been hired to do AA's 12-step work. The violation in these instances was not professionalism at all. It was breaking anonymity. And this was with respect where if you read through here with the Alcohol Commission, and there was a group of individuals locally from where I am, and you know, they made a movie and they tried to be, you know, they would argue that's not what they were doing, but they tried to be famous and make money off of AA. And, you know, in general, I just don't understand that concept anyway, because that's not what got you sober. But what's scary is I watched with my own eyes. There was area assemblies, there was workshops, we were having a lot of fun in the service structure. But then when these particular group of individuals who recently made a movie, who were all over the place and everybody knew their names and social media and stuff, everybody wanted to, new people wanted to go with them. Because of course, if you're 3 days sober and you're going to be on TV and you're going to march down the block in DC and you're going to be on, you know, channel blank news, you're thinking you want to go there versus let me go up to the local area assembly where they have, you know, pasta and bread with butter, you know. But that's kind of our fault. I always take responsibility for that. I'm not helping make it attractive enough. I'm not connecting people enough, but just things to consider. 1 second, Brooke. So the last thought on tradition eight, and it says it here on page 117, AA's sole purpose was being compromised and the name of Alcoholics Anonymous was being misused. That's a fascinating discussion. Before we can have that discussion, we need to be clear on what the name Alcoholics Anonymous is. What is the proper way to use the name Alcoholics Anonymous? And I think the first seven traditions tell us that. Of course, all of them tell us that. But the first seven tell us that. If we don't have that idea of the common welfare with respect to AA, like a lot of these parking lot debates, I would love to have a sharing session one time. If any of you are putting one, add me to the list. I'd love to just have, we have a friend of ours, some people in this room that did a workshop on myth and misconceptions and all that. I'd like to also have a similar workshop where we just talk about what people actually think. Like, for example, what's an AA group? You could tell me all day what you think, but we've already defined that. I want to talk about what we've already defined. Now, if you want to go through the conference process and you want to change that, I have no problems with that. But in my experience, a lot of us are not informed of what's already been defined. What is an AA group? What is an AA meeting? You know, what makes an AA group? Why are the traditions? Like, and we can go, what is the program of recovery? Are we really going to argue that? Even though it's written 722 times? So I think it's important that we know that so that if you disagree, you can disagree well. Or if you don't know, you can learn. But I'd like to have the same conversation. Sometimes we're having different conversations, and that in itself is a distraction from the primary purpose. Go ahead, Brooke.
Hey, says, I have an old home group member that left the group to work at a treatment center. He now comes to the meeting as an employee of the treatment center, driving people to the meeting. I had a conversation with him going over tradition 6 and 8 and why we don't do that. And he continues to do it. What would you do at that point?
Yeah, I mean, these are interesting questions because I am the worst advice giver, but I'm very successful with these questions. But I don't expect you to be me because you're not. And you're going to have a different approach than me. You're going to have different experience than me. It may be better than me sometimes. It may be whatever. But my experience is always about direct, open, honest, clear-cut communication. And when I put principles ahead of all those things, it's often successful. Not always on my timeline. Now, it's not my job to tell Joey, and I'm just saying this guy's name is Joey, what to do. It's not. And it's not my job to sit and obsess about what Joey should do, especially when I'm not taking my own inventory. But I do think it's all of our jobs to communicate and carry A's message and try to connect. And when we see something that kind of goes against that, we have a discussion. But then you got to be tactful, right? Because if Joey's doing something outside of AA, then I need to ask Joey for permission. Can we have some coffee? I'd like to have a conversation. I'm working with a service sponsor now. We're reading these AA guidelines. I'm looking at Comes of Age. I'm hearing some really cool stuff on the virtual platform about, you know, working and not professionalized AAs. I'd like to get your perspective on that. Are you aware of these things? What do you think? I say this story all the time, so I'm sorry to bore those that have heard it. But when I was delegate, we had a huge contingency. Most of those were the kids that made that movie that thought anonymity was outdated. Anonymity didn't matter in AA anymore. So I held a workshop as a delegate inviting all of them to come tell us why anonymity wasn't important, because that in itself is a good conversation, because we get to hear what people are thinking and then we get to carry the message. It's really no different. I say it all the time. Service and recovery are not different. You don't just walk into a correctional facility or a treatment center, open up a big book, share your story for 5 minutes, and there's a line out the door of people wanting to get sober. It doesn't work that way. We just got to tactfully, creatively, and effectively carry the message, and then the results are up to God. I will tell you this. This is just my experience and my opinion. If you have any relationship with anybody, with this particular example, have a conversation. Find a way to have a conversation. 99%, this is my experience, 99% of the time, people are not aware. They have no clue, which is why if you notice when you come at them, they're like, mind your business. They don't understand that you're talking about A as a whole. And here's some things that could harm us. But also I would suggest, I know I'm going long-winded here, but also I would suggest making things personal. Hey man, I'm also kind of concerned about you. I haven't seen you at a meeting for 9 months ever since you got this job. And now it's all about what kind of people you can get into the treatment center. And you're calling up the service structure, asking for free registrations for your clients. I mean, that's not what you were doing 9 months ago when you were a GSR. So like, you know, make it personal too. Again, I don't give advice. I'm just saying these are things I do. Any other questions, Brooke? Okay. So the short and long form of tradition 9. Running out of time here, and Bob's got his eye on me, as he always does.
He let them go long last week. Ooh. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I could keep going even when the timer stops, but I want to respect the group conscience. So tradition 9, each AA group needs the least, the short form first. A as such would never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Another perfect example of why I don't like the short form. Unless you already know what this stuff means, that stuff is like, what does that mean? What does it mean that AA as such would never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve? With that being said, that's a very powerful line once we understand Tradition 9. And I love Tradition 9, and I want to talk about it here in the short amount of time we have. But let me just read the long form. Each AA group needs the least possible organization. It doesn't mean we're not organized. It doesn't mean we don't have a pad and a pen. It doesn't mean we don't elect people. We're not a corporation in this sense. We're not doing anything of that sort. Rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the General Service Board are, and I love this, because everybody, this is a 7 tradition answer, this next line. Just hear what I'm saying. The trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, our AA General Service Committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of our voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA General Service Office at New York. I screamed loud and loud and loud and loud when I worked at the office that we need to keep writing this because we don't make contributions to the General Service Office. We make contributions to the General Service Board for services provided by the General Service Office. And that's not a huge deal because I'm a stickler, but it's a huge deal because of the spiritual impact of what that means, what responsibility our trustees actually have, what responsibility you have in the 7 tradition versus just chucking $20 up the triangle. So there's a lot more there than just, oh, well, that's a play on words. They're authorized by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. Great line. Leadership is not self-appointed, which we talked about in Tradition 2. And leadership is rotating, so you don't own the platform. However, true leaders in AA, if you want to know what those are trusted and experienced servants. Trusted and experienced. And how are people trusted? By how they interact, by how they behave. And how are they experienced? By practicing these principles. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. And here's the best line. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. Now we go back to the short form. AA is never organized, so we're not a corporation. But we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. So what Tradition 9 is telling you is about cooperation with professional community. It's telling you about public information. It's telling you about intergroup or central office committees. It's telling you about conference committees. It's telling you about committees you have at your group. It's telling you about communication. We can't be directly responsible to those we serve if we don't communicate with them. We can't be directly responsible to those we serve if we don't know what their needs are and try to meet them. We can't be directly responsible for those we serve if we're not hearing them. And sometimes that also means if we know we have a large Hispanic, you know, population in our area, but we don't have any Hispanic members, those members, quote unquote, don't have a voice yet. But what are we doing to connect with those? What are we doing to connect with the local Hispanic churches and getting something in the bulletin? What are we doing to hire an interpreter and go to the local, the one local Hispanic AA group? And I'm just giving you scenarios that I've been in. So we can't be directly responsible to those we serve if we don't communicate. For those of you who are involved in young people, and I don't have any problems with young people. My first AA home group was a young person's group. I served as a chairperson of a conference committee. I mean, I'm sorry, of the New England Conference of Young People in AA. I served on the advisory board. I worked with Icky Paw, first in the service structure, also the general service office. I love young people in AA. I just don't ever want to be misquoted. However, tradition 9 is very interesting because it's very hard to be directly responsible when you have a young person's advisory board or a young person's committee because you don't have that service structure, which tells me it's important to have the structure. And then the chips fall where they may versus trying to create a separate structure where young people reside or a separate structure where blank resides. It's important for us to have our structure, communicate within our structure, and serve all of those cross sections or whatever within our structure. Because even if you create a forum that's on a website, even if you create a young person's committee that travels around all year, you don't have that general service representative meeting with a DCM and then meeting at the area assembly to have all of that information. When you create a forum, it's a great idea and it's worked for years for Icky Paw and this and that, but that forum is not really open. It's selective, so to speak. But again, some people may disagree, that's fine, but I'm giving you an example of why Tradition 9 speaks about being responsible to those we serve, and we can't do that without communication. Communication, communication, communication. Tradition 9 and comes of age. I ask my sponsees this question, and I ask myself this question. And this is a tough one if you really embrace it. But am I okay with zero status? Just being a part of? Do I always need to be in charge? Do I always need to be in control? Do I always need to be the top dog? Whatever version of that you want to say. Am I okay with zero status? Again, universal respect is the key. What do we really mean, of course, is that AA can never have an organized direction or government. And while there hasn't been any actual governments formed inside Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm aware of, but when we have these little, I don't know what to call them, but hierarchy kind of these people in charge, go ask so-and-so if you're not in this line of sponsorship, like those are very problematic for AA. Very problematic in my experience, and we have to be careful of that. AA should never be organized. It's not hierarchical with any kind of central authority. That includes Bill with the suspenders who runs the Big Book workshop every week, or whoever, fill in the blank. Like, it's really about, why am I drawing a blank? We're democratic in thought and action, like it talks about in our warranties. But we can't have that if we don't allow communication, if we don't allow the traditions and the platform to do so. Service committees are organized often with chairpersons. For example, we define authority matching responsibility. And you will learn about that in your concepts workshop, or if you're already going through the concepts, it's very important for whatever authority you have a matching responsibility. So when we say authority in AA, I don't have the authority to tell you to leave or to tell you what to do, but I do have the authority, if I'm the chairperson, to set the agenda. If I'm the secretary, I do have the authority of how I'm going to take notes. If I'm the CPC chair, I do have the authority of what book we're going to read today or whatever the case is. But it matches my responsibility. It never exceeds that. So it really kind of has checks and balances. The underlying direction of committees, though, in which they serve are guiding by a loving God as outlined in tradition too, or whatever you believe in. At the end of the day, and I just recently, and there's a couple of them on the call here, I just facilitated a district inventory this, what was it yet? It might have even been yesterday. But we really talked about the idea of the group conscience and the idea of where that brings us and the voices being heard. But we also talked about meeting people where they're at, but also understanding that not everyone knows everything right away. And that's okay, but that's why it's important to be honest. So don't settle for an abstention ever in a business meeting. Vote no. And when they ask for minority opinion, get up there. Don't say you abstain. Get up there and say, I vote no because I've been at this district meeting for 4 months and I can't get accurate information. So it's hard for me to vote for this because I don't know yet. Because then we learn. When you tell us why it's no, then we learn. Or why it's yes or whatever. So definitely communicate. Use your responsibility to communicate, and then we know how to serve you best. On a broader scope, you know, there's microeconomics, macroeconomics, and then there's micro-macro in the world of spirituality, in my opinion. And on the macro level, if we don't have a general service representative, if we're not communicating with the district in the area, then we're not really responsible to those we serve in our group. Because they had no idea that they could have submitted their story for the fifth edition big book. They had no idea that they were updating a pamphlet, that they could have shared their experience, and they might have had a hell of a story that could have helped some drunk down the line, but they didn't know that because you didn't have a general service representative, or if you were a general service representative, you weren't at the district meeting to get that information to give them, or your alternate wasn't there. So there's actually a lot on the line. We have fallen victim to this idea of it's just politics and it's boring and this and that, probably because some district meetings are boring. So we need to fix that. But they're actually the heartbeat of Alcoholics Anonymous. And once we figure out how to effectively get this communication train going, in my experience, that many more lives are saved. More importantly, the traditions can work. We can't work the traditions if we're not working the traditions. Another question I often ask my sponsees and myself, do I understand the paradox of there are no musts in AA? Do I understand the paradox that there are no musts in AA? The fact that no human has authority. And I love this question when I'm around a bunch of big book folks, because I know there's 7,722,000 musts in the big book. I know that. I know the big book myself very well, but there are no musts to be an AA member. But if you want what we have, then you must do what we've done. That's a way better approach in my experience. It really allows for the opportunity to meet people where they're at versus hitting them over the head with whatever weapon. And if we're all honest, that's the most effective approach with each of us anyway. Some of us like a firm person and we like guidance, but we still don't like to be told what to do. And if we do, then we're also in another program, such as Al-Anon or codependency, right? Because we're just complacent to everything. Unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps of recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. Drunkenness and disintegration are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They are results of personal disobedience to spiritual principles. We must obey spiritual principles or we die. The same stern threat applies to the group itself. Unless there is approximate conformity to A's 12 traditions, the group too can deteriorate and die. I know there's terms like, you know, religiosity and legalism and all these things. I don't know how much you pontificate about that stuff. And is AA a cult and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't think in my experience people are telling me they're going to work the steps or die, or the group needs to work traditions or die because we're being dramatic. I think it's because we've buried a few people, because we know ourselves we've almost died or we've been walking dead. So I really identify, and I hate putting these adverbs and adjectives except when needed, but I really identify with the real alcoholic because my life is on the line with this stuff. It's not dramatic. I'm not saying it to control you. I'm not saying it to bypass. I'm saying it because my life is on the line and I know those that I work with's life's on the line. And I just wish sometimes we would either be clear about what an alcoholic is or we would understand that our lives are on the line because we're in the same boat. We're all in the same boat. And that's what distractions are. We've talked about tradition five. We get so locked up on things that have nothing to do with AA, and then we miss the message. Trying to round this out here. While AA has to function, it must at the same time avoid wealth, prestige, and power, three great dangers which necessarily tempt nearly all human societies. Though tradition nine at first sight seems to deal with purely practical matters, it embodies a deep spirituality in its actual operation. AA is a society without organization, animated only by the spirit of service, a true fellowship. And that's something we can connect on. My sponsor talked to me in early days of going through the big book, where he said we have the common peril, which is can't stop drinking, alcoholism, and then we have the common solution, which is the 12 steps. If you're new to this, or if you've been here for a while, again, service and recovery are not separate. The whole reason we have traditions is to help us make carrying the message more effective. The whole reason we have the concepts is so we can work with the world about us to help make the message of the 12 steps more effective. So don't get it twisted. Whenever we're talking about anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're supposed to be talking about the 12 steps of recovery and how we carry that message and how we do it better and what we can learn. Just one last thing that I ask my sponsees and I ask myself, and this is a good one. Do I bask in self-praise, or am I open-minded and unified with group participation? Do I bask in self-praise? Am I selfish and telling myself what a good job I did or how much important things I have to say? Or am I open-minded in what the group has to say and what role the group wants to elect me in participating? Because if we're going to sit here and talk about the informed group conscience and we're going to talk about being directly responsible to those they served, then I'm ending right now, Bob. I have to trust where you put me. I have to trust what you elect me to. Thanks for the opportunity to share on 8 and 9 tonight.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.